And this is NPR News. I'm Mike Mulcahy. Thanks for tuning in today. How can we get our kids to do better in school? That's a question that gets debated a lot, whether it's about teaching, testing, charter schools, or vouchers. But some studies show kids spend only about 15% of their time in school. That means a big part of the answer to helping kids do better lies with parents. So how do you help your child become a successful, happy, and self-sufficient student? Are there some approaches that work better than others? And what do you do when you run up against that homework assignment that even you don't remember how to do? Those are some of the topics we'll discuss this hour. I'd love to hear from you with your questions. Give us a call to join in. 651-227-6000 is the number. 651-227-6000. I'm joined in the studio by Dr. Susan Walker. She's an associate professor in the Department of Family Social Science at the University of Minnesota. And Dr. Monica Potter, a licensed parent educator and program director for early childhood and parenting education for Robbinsdale area schools. And thanks so much, both of you, for being here. I really appreciate it.
Good morning.
I guess we all know that, or I think we've all heard that when kids are young, before they start school, the best thing you can do for them is read, right? How much of a difference does that make, Susan Walker, and what should we be reading to our kids in those early years?
Oh, gosh. Well, we can be reading a great variety of books. I think the important thing is how we read and what we do with that time to read with children in terms of that interaction opportunity, so that it really builds on children's sense of closeness and warmth and support, you know, with their parents, so that if that relationship with a parent is caring and the child feels that they can, you know, rely on the parent, then they're more likely to focus on whatever that activity is. If it's reading, if it's, you know, problem solving, you know, playing in the dirt, whatever, you know. And so, and so with that relationship, then, you know, a variety of books, but also, you know, the imagery and parents pointing out things within the books. Monica, how about you? What kinds of things do you recommend?
I'd like to add to this, too, because it's so much more than just reading to children. It's having a literacy-rich environment where there's words, there's print material, it's songs, it's music, it's just storytelling, laughter, and play. Mm-hmm. And I want to build on Susan's comment about relationships. It's really loving relationships and building that foundation for successful readers.
And so is it the reading itself, or is it having the kid in your lap and just...
It's the combination of it all. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what's happening inside a child's brain at that point? What do we know about that? What is that doing to the child?
It's so exciting because the last 25 years or so, we have a lot of new information on neuroscience and what's happening. And what's happening is it's building connections for the child. You know, sometimes when they're 2 years of age and they're talking away, we think they're mini adults, but they're not. They're building the foundation and the neural connections in the brain. And through a loving, caring relationship, and when it's trauma-free or there's not as much fear or stress that Susan talked about, is the primitive brain or the reactive emotional amygdala in the brain forms just a more relaxed interior of the brain. So it's just interesting how we're learning about the brain and how the brain learns. But the most important thing I think for parents to remember is during the first 5 years of life, we are laying the foundation for all future learning.
Okay, well, let's zoom ahead then to that age five, maybe, when your child is about to start kindergarten. Obviously, in kindergarten, there's a lot of reading, there's a lot of singing, there's playing with blocks, things like that. What can a parent do for a kindergartner to help, A, ease that transition to school, because I think we've all dealt with that, those of us who are parents, and B, to help support what's happening inside the classroom at home? Susan?
excuse me, I think one big thing that all families can do is understand the school context. And from very early on, even before that kindergarten time, is to have a strong relationship with the school, and the school to have a strong relationship with the parents. Because the stronger that partnership is, that sense of a partnership between the school and the teachers and the families, and an understanding and an openness of communication, that transition then can be easier for children. Parents can better help to prepare children for what to expect. The school is more likely to understand the individual child and the whole family to welcome them into the school.
So what does that look like, Monica Potter?
What it looks like is most school districts have a program called Early Childhood Family Education, where parents and children come to school together. And part of our job is building a community in the school district, building partnerships, building relationships to support children's healthy growth and learning. So there are groups of parents that come every week to class to learn and share with one another, and we're really trying to build a partnership for what's best for our children in our community.
A lot of parents are strapped for time. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're working. Mm-hmm. Just about every couple is a two-income family these days. How do you balance that with the needs of the child?
And we're always learning from our parents what they want and what they need. And most of our parents tell us that they need an evening class. So our evening classes are the first to fill up. We do parties and events on Saturdays, and we do community events, so it's easy for people to come to us and reach us. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of social media, sharing articles. We do home visits. If a parent calls and they say that they want a home visit and want help, we can send a parenting educator out to their home to help them. Mm-hmm. And then we connect them to the kindergarten. We have kindergarten parents groups, and we have parent educators at elementary schools who are answering questions for parents and visiting with them to support the transitions. And we have a whole program from preschool to kindergarten, getting your child set up for success.
Hmm.
And if I can just
sure.
Piggyback on that a little bit, is Monica's idea about community. Because within ECFE, one of the strong things that has developed is parents' sense of community with the staff, with the school, but especially with other parents. And other parents in that network of parents that are available are just incredible resources of information about what was it like when your child went through the school, you know, when they were in that first grade or that second grade. What was it like with an individual teacher? How big is that class? You know, what was the environment like? Are there school events? There's so much of a school culture that for parents who are new to the experience is tremendous to learn. And I think one of the easiest and best, most comfortable ways is to learn from other parents. And for those that are in your network, the people that you're comfortable with, that you are kind of your go-to people, and certainly connections that are formed in programs like ECFE are a great way for parents to make those connections.
That's Dr. Susan Walker. She's an associate professor in the Department of Family Social Science at the University of Minnesota. Also joined today in the studio by Dr. Monica Potter. She's a licensed parent educator and program director for early childhood and parenting education for Robbinsdale area schools. We're talking about how to help your kids succeed in school. And if you'd like to join the conversation, get a question into these two guests, you're welcome. Give us a call, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. And let's take a call. Andy is on the line from Rochester. Hi, Andy.
Hi there. Good morning to you all. Good morning to your guests. And I have more of a comment, I guess, than a question. I've been a classroom teacher in Rochester for 20 years now, and I also get the privilege of going out to share with parents and childcare providers and do trainings for other teachers. And I think that maybe one of the things is kind of counterintuitive, that we try to make school the thing. We try to make that the goal, when in fact, I want a kid who can think about the real world, who can adapt and respond. There was the book, and maybe the guests are familiar with it, I'm sure, The Carpenter Versus the Gardener by Alison Gopnik. Mm-hmm. And we've tried to professionalize parenting, and which is kind of funny because I go out and do trainings myself, when in fact school performance is almost always an indicator of basic psychological needs. Anxiety is through the roof. worry about doing the right thing for our kids. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, just that idea of kind of over-formalizing that we do with really, really good intention because we want the best for our kids.
Mm. Great question.
Andy, thank you so much for bringing all of that up. I actually use one of Gopnik's articles. I think it was in the New Yorker a couple years ago in my parenting classes. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, my advice or my words with parents are, you know, that your first obligation really is with your child, understanding your child. You're the expert of your child. You're the advocate for your child. But it's all, you know, your relationship and starting from home. And looking long-term about your child's needs. And school is a big context. And I think that's partly why we focus on it is because, you know, the great majority of children are in school context out of the home. And they are such a big part of our society for their own development and academic achievement and going on to college if they're doing that, you know, things like that. That I think that's kind of why we end up having this sort of professionalism of parent-school relationships. But the larger issue or the larger, the more important aspect, I believe, is that the parent's role in developing the child and the lifelong experience and relationship and focusing on the needs of that individual child over time. And if they have more than one child, then how are the needs different for those each individual child? So yeah, I think that the school context, because it is such an important piece for academic achievement and movement in society, has, you know, taken a very important place, of course. That said, you know, parents are partners with schools, but first and foremost, you know, they're there for their children.
And I want to jump in, too, with what Susan said. I agree with her 100%. But we have to keep in mind that parents are their children's first teachers. So how do we build relationships in the community and with schools to support our children? And we do focus quite a bit on school success. And there's a piece of that, but included in that is life success that we want for our children. And when I think about the book, The Carpenter, Allison Gopnik's book, I think about we as parents, what do we decide our role is in supporting our children as they go along? And Gary Wagner has a great book out called Creating Innovators. And how do we think about that as our children go through their school and life journey of how do we create critical thinkers and problem solvers to be successful in the world?
Well, give us a little more about that. How do we do that? I mean, that seems like the hard part. When I was a kid, and maybe I'm not remembering because it was a long time ago, but I wouldn't see my parents all day, especially in the summer. I'd be out playing with friends all day long and come back at night for dinner and then be out again. And it seems like these days kids don't do that. It's much more formal. There's much more of a routine. You know, you have to get to practice. You have to do whatever. So how do you let a kid be independent within those structures that we've set up for them?
That's a great, great question. You know, we live in a different world now, a competitive global society. And so I think, and I'm anxious to hear what Susan has to say about this as well, is that we have to think about as parents our role. What is our role going to be? It's extremely important that kids are outside playing, being independent, and all those pieces. But then think about our role as a parent. How do we support our children's growth? Like an example of an elementary school student, they're going to come home with homework. Okay, so how can I, as a parent, in my role, support that child with creating a quiet space where they can study and concentrate? Mm. And rather than telling our children what to do, think of our role more as listening to what they need. They'll tell you what they need. And then figuring out how to ask coaching questions so they can come up with good answers, critically think about choices to support them in school and life.
That's Monica Potter. We're also joined by Susan Walker today. Should we take another call? Jennifer's on the line in St. Paul.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you? Oh, I'm on the radio. Great conversation. I was so excited I had to stop in the parking lot and pull over.
That's great.
That's good. Great. I'm glad you're not driving.
Yeah.
Couple of comments. ECFE, I feel, saved my life. And whenever I come in contact with people who don't know about it, I'm very willing to tell them about it.
Oh, Jennifer, thank you. Thank you.
Because I think it, you know, like, they sent me home, as an educated person, they sent me home every time with the child in the car seat. And I was like, you think I know what to do? but my comment, I mean, I'm getting some ideas already of, I'm one of these high anxiety parents with four children, two school districts. And of course it's evolved over time, but I've, my question went around kind of suggestions for how to handle conferences, because I went from, we have 20 minutes in elementary school with one teacher, and you can kind of get a sense of conversation and getting to know the teacher. But then we moved to middle school and I get 4 minutes with each teacher, and it's round robin trying to, you know, stand in line, and you don't get a whole lot. And of course, that's where this transition of the child, I guess, you know, owning their homework comes into play. But I'm wondering if there's specific things that I should be looking to ask when I'm in a conference, other than, you know, also trying to get to know the teacher.
Great questions, Jennifer. I want to jump in first here, being a school district employee. As teachers in the school system, we crave and want relationships with parents. We want to be co-supporters in your children's education. And as teachers are trying to build relationships with parents, sending out emails or phone calls when your child has done wonderful things, or just trying to build that relationship. So if you're feeling like you're not having that relationship and only having 4 minutes to talk with your child and teacher, let the teacher know. I'm sure that they would be more than willing to support you, because that's our goal, the success of your child and support. So if you feel like you're not getting what you need, please go to the teacher. Let them know. It's really important that we're helping one another. And when it comes to homework, how can you set your child up for success? Talk to them about where or when or what time they'd like to do their homework, and listen to their questions and really listen to what they're sharing with you. If they feel that they're overwhelmed or there's some kind of feeling that they're not understanding, talk to them about, you know, how they are empowered to talk to their teacher. And if they're not getting anywhere talking with their teacher around help, then, you know, at what point does the child want you to support them and maybe have a meeting with the teacher to find how you can receive more support? We have so many supports at public schools, from parenting educators to social workers, psychologists, cultural liaisons. We want to be there. And the best way we can do this is through a relationship with you.
So the teacher really doesn't mind if, you know, I've had my kid come to me and say, I don't understand this homework. And I say, talk to the teacher. And she says, you know, I tried and it didn't work. And the teacher really doesn't mind if I call and say,
of course,
what's going
on? Of course, we want to talk to you. We are there to serve you and your family. We want the best for all of our children.
Okay.
Yeah. If I can just piggyback on that too, you know, first of all, Jennifer, let me, my heart goes out to you for all of the energy that it goes into what you're doing right now between two school districts, which is a lot right there, and four children. And, you know, I agree with Monica. You think that the parent-teacher conferences, whether it's 20 minutes or 4 minutes, that context alone, I think, you know, as a parent of a child through the schools, you know, I would go into those things just thinking, what possibly can I accomplish in this time? You know, I mean, how much is this structure really allowing to happen? Probably not relationship building, which is why finding other opportunities, or the school making other opportunities to build those relationships, is really important. One thing I think, especially, you know, since you have children in two districts, and inevitably those four children are going to be very different, would be going in there and using your children as partners, and and asking them what would they like you to accomplish at these meetings, because that school and family partnership is important, but the school family child partnership is critical too. And so I think that your children as well can inform you when you go in and try to focus on, in this 4 minutes or in this 20 minutes, you know, what is possible for me to achieve? What are my number one goals, and how do they reflect my child's needs?
That's Susan Walker from the University of Minnesota, also joined today by Monica Potter from Robbinsdale Area Schools, talking about how to help your child succeed in school, how to help your kid be happy and accomplish things. You can join the conversation, get your question in, give us a call, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. And let's go to Emily, who is in Robbinsdale.
Hi, and Monica, I want to say I'm an ECFE parent in the Robbinsdale schools, so I wanted to thank you because it's a fantastic program, and I go with my daughter on Tuesday mornings. I wanted to say I am lucky to have a great work-life balance that allows me to have a day off during the week so I can take her in the morning when it's a good time to be with her, and gives me the chance to not only get the parent education and the support from my fellow parents, but also, you know, it's great for her. It helps so much with her separation anxiety, and just seeing her blossom, and even though it's, you know, one day a week. And I have 9-month-old twins, so spending the time with my 2.5-year-old one-on-one is great. And I feel like I'm getting my instruction manual, by the way. That's really helpful. You know, where's that book that you don't get when they're born?
But Emily,
I wanted to say that the thing that's really helped us, my daughter loves books, absolutely loves books, and she has a great attention span. And I think that that seems to have come from, we have been really strict about television. Mm-hmm. And if we watch children's television with her, we watch old Mr. Rogers and old Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. And the pacing of those shows is so much more gentle and slow. And
yes,
even modern Sesame Street, as great as it is, you know, it's one of the best children's shows out there. It's still faster paced with quicker cuts, and, you know, and it just doesn't move in the same way. And because we watch that, and we watch that sit down with her and everything, I mean, I won't lie, we use TV as a, you know, to distract her, you know.
Well, we're all human.
Yeah, exactly. But we don't use it very much. And I really see the difference in her attention span versus other children I've known. And also, we modeled this after friends of ours who did the same with their kids. And now they're in grade school. Number one, they're doing great, but they also are very, you know, calm and centered kids. And so they were great role models for us.
Emily,
so, that's my big advice to parents of young kids.
Thank you so much, Emily, for calling in. When I was listening to you, I was writing down a couple words and things that I felt were so important in what you were saying, is the piece around balance and a slow pace in our society as we're ramping up and trying to do 80 million things at once. Our children need us to slow down. And we have to model, as you brought up, model that slowing down, having time to cuddle together on the couch, having time to laugh and giggle and read a story. And when you're reading to your children, they are able to attend, listen, and engage. And that's the foundation for all their success in the future.
It really gets hard, though, doesn't it, to limit TV and screen time, especially as the kids start getting older, as they get their own phones?
Very much so. And Susan is the expert here when it comes to technology and many of the studies that she's done on technology and parenting.
Well, and I just wanted to comment, you know, Emily, too. Let me echo Monica's words. I really support everything that, you know, when some of the words I picked out from some of the things is, yes, you are learning from modeling from other parents, which is great. The other thing that you're doing, though, is you're reflecting your daughter's interest. You know, I mean, not all children are into books, but what you've picked up on is that your daughter is interested in books, and you're capitalizing on that. And I think a way that we are experts with our own children is when we listen and we attend to what they are into. But regarding the use of technology, and in this case, watching television, you're doing what, you know, I think is increasingly the skill that for us as parents we need to obtain with technology, which is to be intentional, which is to think about what technology brings to our children or bring to our lives, but also both pros, but also consequences. And in this case, it could be, is it too fast paced? Is it exposure to images that they're not ready for? Is it, you know, eventually cyberbullying? You know, just what might it be? And being involved with your daughter, thinking about and being very intentional about her media consumption and the selection. I mean, the fact that you're selecting the type of media that she's watching related to the pacing and the stories and can reflect on what it was like before and that pacing versus now. I mean, that's really, really wonderful. And so, you know, parents are being so, you know, my own research with parents of young children, they're overwhelmed and kind of scared about the rapid change in technology, and it's kind of hard for them to keep up. And so I think that your being intentional is a really excellent modeling itself to other parents about at least, you know, like walking in and seeing this technology and asking, you know, what's in it for my child, what's in it for me, but also what are the potential consequences and how can I be intentional in the choice of how my child consumes this technology, this media, for how long, and what is it doing to benefit my child and my family.
And I'd like to add to that the developmentally appropriate piece with technology, because Emily, what you're doing is it is appropriate for the age of your child. And as parents, we need to think about what is the appropriate use. Last summer, I was walking around Lake Harriet, and there was an 18-month-old in a stroller, and the parents had set a laptop on the child's lap. So it's just that intentional piece of thinking about what is developmentally appropriate as well.
That gets a little harder when there are older siblings around, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. This isn't easy. And that's why, once again, parents need to be intentional, think about their role with their children, and what limits do you want to set around technology? There was a little child that was having a really tough time settling in any way in class, and he kept fighting with other students, and he was talking to us about Jason Bourne and Planet of the Apes. So we talked with the parents and the grandparents and said, you know, this behavior is coming from this screen time. How can we do something that might be more age appropriate for him? And playing and reading books and games, also to help his attention in school and be able to self-regulate.
Okay. Let's take another call, huh? Jess is on the line from St. Paul.
Hi, Jess.
Hey. I love this conversation.
Thank you.
I'm a mom of four, did the ECFE as well. And my youngest daughter is 10. I have all girls. The oldest is 20, so quite a span of years. And my question actually has to do with that. So my older children, when they were in elementary school, didn't have any homework. And I know we've talked about homework a lot in this program. And I'm calling in because I'm a lifelong learner. I love to learn. I love science. And I sometimes, you know, get the chance to do experiments with my own kids and observing their behavior and seeing what they need. And I hear a lot of studies coming out about how important it is for our kids to be in nature, how 30 minutes of being outside can be just as effective as, you know, medication for depression and how screen time can be detrimental. But my daughter in junior high is coming home with her own iPad. And, and I have, a lot of research around homework and experience before that research even came out, before I read it, my own experience with my younger children and having homework in elementary school and just how much anxiety it led to and how little free time we had as a family to even just be able to play outside or have board game night or have friends over, or God forbid we had to go grocery shopping because then we wouldn't have enough time to get it all done. And I'm wondering, with all of this research coming out, it seems like the school systems are very rigid and not able to be nimble enough to react and respond to what we're learning. And it takes years. I mean, we're a no homework family. I wrote to my kids' teacher and said, we can't do this anymore. It's not sustainable. But what about all of the other children who are in that class, you know, and I wonder how can I have an impact short of running for school board or becoming a teacher myself to change the system?
That's a great question.
Hi,
Monica.
Jess. I want to tell you, first of all, thank you. It's a big job raising four girls. And how involved you are and all the appropriate things you're doing. And I love that you said, you know, observing their behavior and understanding where they're at. It is about balance. And school systems have all kinds of requirements as well, just the system and the testing that has to happen or the assessment, because we want to be successful. So there's this piece of balance. And you have to work toward... I mean, parents have to be really knowledgeable about these about the research and pay attention to it. Like if children come home, let's say you have an elementary school child, they come home, they're tired, they're stressed, they're maybe angry or just frustrated. So thinking about your child's and observing their behavior, they probably need to go outside. They need to be outside, relax, rest, have something to eat, and get their basic needs taken care of. So it's always that balance of each child. There's some children that, you know, they work hard in school and they can come home and jump into their homework. And other children, they just need that break. But I'll tell you, we can't forget about the piece, the nature piece, how important it is. And Richard Louv's book, Nature Deficit Disorder, I think it is just fabulous with the research on how important it is to be outside.
Susan Walker, on this question of homework, how much is enough? How much is too much?
Oh, gosh, I'm not touching that one. I would respect the individual teachers. You know, if I think about Andy, our original caller, you know, I respect individual teachers and their determination of, I mean, as an instructor myself, you know, I can determine how much work or out of class assignments and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I would lean to the teacher. I think, you know, but in terms of from a parent perspective, is understanding what expectations from the teachers about a discipline is, you know, like is being asked of the children, and then what you believe is reasonable. Because, you know, if we also think about children in high school, a lot of these kids too are working jobs. Mm-hmm. They're in sports, they're in out of school events, you know, they're doing work for the families. And so the amount of time that they actually have for homework may not also be feasible, right? And so this is where getting back to, you know, the question just prior to this is about being an advocate for the child and again, being an expert in understanding the child and their own needs and limitations and what you're doing at home, but then also with that school interface. And I would just say, too, you know, and this gets into the homework question or about how much is find where the different parts of the system that you can be an advocate. So starting with that individual teacher. And if you're wondering about how much homework or being involved with homework or that it's too much or whatever, is there any flexibility or latitude in that with that individual teacher and also with the principal or with that whole school or talking with other parents? And so it's kind of finding places within that system where you as a parent can get more information to be able to answer, I guess, that question yourself,
okay,
how much homework is enough?
I have to say our time has flown by.
Oh,
and
no.
We are just about out.
I want to keep talking.
We'll have to have you back. Dr. Monica Potter from the Robbinsdale Schools and Dr. Susan Walker from the University of Minnesota, thank you so much for being here, and thanks everyone who called.
Oh, thank you for calling in. Yeah.